Food is God. My buddy and Penn Sunday School co-host Matt Donnelly lost a shit ton of weight right after I did. He looks like a new person. He needed to go even below his high school weight because he was already a fat fuck in high school. He's now way below his high school weight. He's the lightest he's been as an adult. It's a big deal. He had done comedy with a lot of fat guy material. He lost a lot of his act along with the weight. Weight changes performance. Matt does improv with his partner, Paul Mattingly, and their style has changed. They used to be two fat guys stuck dealing with each other, but now Matt has to treat Paul differently. He can still bust his balls and condescend to him, but now Matt has to play the bad guy more often. If Matt attacks Paul directly, the audience turns on Matt. Now Matt is kind of the wise ass, the ballsy kid who gets kicked out of class. The body changes content and style. I used to be able to stand on stage and have a certain kind of power just standing there like a monolith. Now I have to replace some of that weight with energy. I move more. It's a big change. Matt could be meaner when he was fatter. He needed to be in a big fat glass house if he wanted to throw stones. In comedy, thin people have to be kinder. The thinner me is much nicer, off stage and on. I smile more on stage. It's not just that I feel better, although that's part of it. It's not just that I'm happier, although that's part of it. It's also that I feel that the audience wants this thinner me to be different. Not only do movements look different on a thinner me, but also ideas are understood differently. I have to do a little bit of massaging of how I present the message because the medium has changed. Matt's stand-up and improv have changed in the auditions for different TV and movie roles. He's no longer the belching, pizza-stained rude friend or the creepy goofball in the diaper. He's now the regular guy, maybe even a leading man, I guess we'll see. His wife dated him fat. She married him fat. She fucked him fat. Now he's a thin guy and better looking than she bargained for. It's the same for my wife. This is the thinnest she's ever seen me, and that's nutty. But I'm not as good looking as Matt. I'm sure his wife Sarah doesn't really love him any more now than she did before, but things sure didn't get worse when he got better looking. They both claim to me that they enjoy fucking more now that Matt is skinnier, but they haven't demonstrated that to me yet. Maybe if he or I lose a few more pounds. Matt and Sarah have two little babies, and when Matt was a sick fat fuck, he had a really push to help care for them. Now he's getting off his meds and he has more energy for his family. The new Matt is better for Matt and for his family. Matt is also embracing the vanity that my New England upbringing won't let me celebrate full on. Maybe it's not the New England, New Jersey difference between us. Maybe it's just that he's better looking than me. He looks great in his new skinny suits, and he knows it. When Matt was fat, he landed the understudy part of Christian Grey in the live musical parody of 50 Shades of Grey here in Vegas. It's written for a fat guy in the lead. There's a bunch of fat jokes. There are dance numbers in which Christian wears nothing but a tiny red singlet, one of those Borat banana hammock mankini things that just barely slings over the cock and balls and then goes up over the shoulders. Matt thought he might lose his job with the weight loss, but God is kind, and even thin guys look appalling in red singlets. Speaking of God, Matt said to me after he'd hit his target weight, "It's just atheism. It's all just atheism." It is all just atheism. And since I've written two books that were supposed to be about atheism, while actually being more about dropping my cock into a blow dryer, the way this book is supposed to be about losing weight, but might as well be about dropping my cock in a blow dryer, it seems I should explain. I'm going to guess from the people I see at my book signings that many people who will read this book are atheists, who might also feel like they need to lose weight. I'll do my best to tie those two things together. Christopher Hitchens argued that everyone is an atheist about almost all gods. Full atheists just go one god further. Everyone knows what it feels like to not believe in Thor. One just has to extend that peaceful, easy feeling one god further. Many people reading this book already know what it feels like to live in a culture where everyone takes things for granted that aren't true. As Bob Dylan sang, "To live outside the law, you must be honest." Yep. Being honest and living outside the law are all it takes to be thin. I'm a big-ass capitalist. I'm all for food companies and drug companies and doctors doing anything they can to honestly sell their services and get as rich as they can. Our bodies are not their responsibility. Our bodies are our own responsibilities. It should not take a village to decide what I eat. People with something to sell should tell the truth and shouldn't cheat. But they are not responsible for my personal decisions. It's my responsibility to be informed about my decisions. That's all me, not them. And it sure shouldn't be the guys with the guns collecting taxes. The government should not ban cigarettes or trans fats. But just because they're legal doesn't mean I should use them. It's not the government's responsibility to keep me healthy. I don't get pissed at lobbyists for rigging the diet game on package labeling. I get pissed at people for thinking the government should help them eat right. I'm not talking reality. Am I ever? In reality, the government makes us pay in all sorts of ways for everyone else's health care. So everything you do in the United States really is my business. It's my financial business. Once we've set up the government to force people to pay for one another's health care, freedom goes out the window. If I'm paying, even indirectly, for your health care, you are not smoking or riding that motorcycle, young lady. And how much of my money gets put at risk every time you take a bareback up the ass, young man? It's some of my money. So why don't you take all those sexy men out of your bedroom and go see a movie and wear a seatbelt? Or better yet, walk there in the afternoon on the sidewalk, wearing a fluorescent orange vest and a hard hat when there's no lightning and no heart-clogging popcorn for anyone ever. If you want to be a fat fuck, you should be able to be a fat fuck as long as I don't have to pay for your hypertension, diabetes, heart problems, colon cancer, and all the other shit that's probably more likely to strike you at your fat fuck weight. It should be an individual decision. I don't know what's best for other people. Did Jim Morrison have a better life than me being killed by drugs before he was half my age? I don't know. I really don't know. Orson Welles and Marlon Brando, do they enjoy eating more than they would have enjoyed making more brilliant art? I don't know. McDonald's is going to work hard to sell you shitty food. Salt, sugar, and fat that we all know is bad for us. Okay, lots of people are trying to sell you shitty music and shitty movies and shitty religions. Churches are trying to sell you on wasting your life and misplacing your love. As long as we don't subsidize the fructose that McDonald's sells or give the churches a tax break, I'm fine with all that. I know we already do those things. For the sake of argument, let's pretend we don't. Let's push for freedom. I want to be free to not smoke marijuana and not do heroin. I'm not really free to not do anything if it's illegal. I don't get credit. It's more fun to not eat trans fats and fructose if they are legal and everywhere. I want the power to honestly choose for myself not to do something. Being an atheist is its own kind of special fun in a Christian nation. To live outside the law, you must be honest. I'm writing personally about fun. It's been fun for me in this Christian nation. I've been treated very well by Christians, and I've been able to laugh at the goofiness. But I'm aware that it was anything but fun for many of the atheist heroes in this country who paved the way for the rest of us and who were persecuted for their lack of faith. Madeline Murray O'Hare had her family beaten almost to death. That sure wasn't fun. And there are lots of insults that aren't much more than a little pain in the ass in the big picture, but still aren't fun. An atheist friend of mine had a 10-inch, don't get excited, blood clot in his neck that was killing him. And the doctor told his wife it was because they were atheists. That's appalling. But really, without the stroke symptoms, they could have laughed it off. Their suffering on that night, he got better, I guess prayer does work, had pinned the pain VU meter, so the Christ-loving asshole MD didn't really make it any worse. My daughter didn't have fun when a classmate told her in third grade that her family being atheists meant that her mom and dad didn't love her. We confronted the kid's parents, and they explained that they weren't even religious. They had no idea where that bullying came from. But we all know where the bullying came from. It came from the buzzkill Christian nation. It's not all fun. I'm a big fan of the anonymous avant-garde music art performance group, The Residents. I weaseled my way into working with them, so I get to watch their fans get very sad when the band had any success at all, because part of what their fans love about the music is that not everyone loves the music. There are some who think that Mamma Mia on Broadway must be good because it's successful, and others who think it must be bad because it's successful. I think it must be bad because of ABBA. It was so stupid that I would revel in being an outsider, a teetotaling, residence-loving atheist in a drunken, Celine Dion-loving Christian nation, yet still eat exactly what the same culture was telling me to eat. I was all bacon and donuts, pretending that I was rebelling against the food scolds, when really I was just getting down on my knees and praying to the big fat status quo while Canadians sang Pablum. I was so good at sitting smugly in a restaurant and watching everyone else order expensive wines and get stupid. Yet I was putting multiple pats of butter on every piece of hot processed bread, putting salt on my prime rib before I tasted it, putting extra blue cheese dressing on my salad, and pre-ordering the chocolate souffle that took an extra 20 minutes to prepare. That was not thinking for myself. That was buying the hype all the way. I was raised in the church of food, and I was a believer. Yeah, I was a believer. It's pretty easy to see why. I was never a Christian as an adult. I wasn't part of that cult. I never smoked dope or drank liquor. I've been to a church without faith. I've been to a Dead concert without drugs. And I've been to Gilly's Country Bar, the real one in Texas, with David Allan Coe playing, not the Vegas one with Pop Country, without liquor. I know what it looked like to watch that mass insanity from my sober, rational high horse. My mom fed me tender pork roast with delicious, salty gravy. And I never thought the Clash singing, "You must not act the way you were brought up," applied to that. I'd eaten more than half a dozen glazed, raspberry-filled Krispy Kreme donuts at one sitting. I'd stuffed my face with chicken and waffles. I got my hot fudge sundaes with extra hot fudge and my bacon and eggs with extra bacon and eggs and a double order of buttered white toast. In the food department, I was shooting China white and talking in tongues. I consider the people who were telling me this food was bad for me to be hippies or scolds. I never had a fun person tell me to eat sane. No one fun ever told me I was eating myself to death. I didn't want to eat sane. I say proudly that I don't ever do recreational drugs. I don't ever drink. It's pretty clear that if I was going to have a toke, if I was going to shoot heroin, I was going to sip wine with dinner, I'd end up like Charles Bukowski. And if I opened up my heart to Jesus, I'd be evangelical. I'm an all-or-nothing kind of guy. I'm sickened by what my buddy Debbie Harry described in a song as cases of partial extremes. The kind of guy I am, if I couldn't eat nothing, I was going to eat everything. There's nothing fun and sexy about moderation. To be thin, I needed to find a way to make my diet as extreme as my other lifestyle choices. I didn't want to be half-assed. Sometimes, when talking about my new diet, I just say, "I don't eat." When I met Charlie Brooker, the genius behind Black Mirror in England, we were making plans for lunch, and he said, "I don't know where to go. You just eat vegetables rolled in chocolate, right?" I said, "Not exactly. I eat twigs rolled in chocolate and dirt, but I can eat that anywhere. I really don't need a diet that allows me to fit in. I'm fine going to places that serve meat, cheese, oil, salt, liquor, and methamphetamines, and plays ABBA. But I'm still going to have a plain nothing-but-plant salad with no dressing except vinegar on the side, or I can eat nothing. Eating nothing is the option I never had before. It doesn't work for a year or really for a month, but it sure works for a supper meeting. When people are going out for a heavy, standard American diet meal, I don't want to say, 'I eat carefully,' so I say, 'I don't eat.' Fasting is so much sexier than ordering carefully. It's a lie, but I like lies sometimes. Now I don't drive through fast food joints. I drive by them, just like I drive right past the bars and the churches and Celine Dion. These are parts of my culture that are not for me. I'm a cat who simply doesn't go to those places. So many of my previous diets tried to make it easy for me, to make me fit in while dieting. What I'm doing now makes me a creep, and I like being a creep. It's so much easier than partial extremes. I was always an outsider to a lot of hype. I just finally lost faith in one hype further. If Hitchens were alive, and he might be if he hadn't drunk, smoked, and eaten badly, I think he might understand. I've just given up one God more. It's just atheism. I must not act the way I was brought up. I watch movies and TV in which people pray, drink, toke, and eat. And those aren't movies about me. I don't want movies about me. I want movies about the dead coming back to Earth and guys who can blow themselves. Why do I want to see a movie about me? I am me. On my favorite John Lennon album, The Plastic Ono Band, made right after he stopped being brought down by the Beatles and finally did his best work with his wife Yoko Ono, yep, I'm very comfortable with the outsider position. He has a song called God. It starts with the line, "God is a concept by which we measure our pain. The usual John Lennon writing that sounds wicked heavy and doesn't really mean very much. The kind of writing that I really like. After that empty intro, he just starts repeating the phrase, "I don't believe in," and then ends every line with a different thing he doesn't believe in. Like Buddha, Jesus, yoga, Gita, Zimmerman. Well, we could fight over that one, but someone already shot him, and so on. He ends the list with, "I don't believe in Beatles." I loved that song since I was a child. My hero, the Amazing Randy, had the amazing meeting in Las Vegas with zillions of skeptics and atheists, and at my private party for them, my band, the No God Band, did a cover of God. When we got to the "I don't believe in" section, we just passed the mic around the audience for a while and let people yell out things they didn't believe in. Dowsing, ESP, UFOs, Mohammed, chiropractors. The list went on and on until the band got tired. Skinny Penn would now add to that list animal products, refined grains, salt, sugar, and oil. John Lennon then ends the song with, "I just believe in me, Yoko and me, and that's reality." Died is just atheism. "I just believe in me, plants and me, and that's reality. The dream is over."